This is Jennifer Dupre interviewing Raymond Fisher, July 27th, 1989. I'll start asking questions. Okay, you're on.
This is Raymond Fisher. Was born in Grand Haven, January 21, 1910.
Okay. Where did you? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Where did your parents come from? Were they living in this area when you were born?
Yeah, my parents have a Dutch background. My mother was born in Friesland, the Netherlands. She came here when she was 12 years old. My father was born in Grand Haven. And he was originally a fisherman. He was a son of Abraham Fisher, who was the original or the first commercial fisherman in Grand Haven. He didn't have a tug at the time. He and his three sons later bought a tug. And later he became one of the leading fishermen in the area. And he and his sons continued to fish until father died, and then they discontinued fishing. They had five children: Abram Fisher is the oldest, he's deceased; Greta Fisher, Koyman, she's deceased. He lived in Grand Haven. She never married. Nelson Fisher owned the Grand Haven Coal and Dock Company. He's also passed away.
What was that? Coal and what company?
Grand Haven Coal and Dock Company. Well, he and Louis Bridles owned the company, and Mr. Bridles has passed away. But, they operated the Grand Haven Coal and Dock Company on Harbor Drive about 20 years, and that was located now where the park on Harbor Avenue was located. What do they call the park down by the waterfront?
The Chinook Pier Park. That I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know. It's right next.
The Lauded Foundation,
yeah,
bought that whole area there.
It's where those little stores are under that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
right,
the coal dock.
Yeah. Okay.
And that now own, I guess the Lala Foundation gave that to the city, and now it's really the center of that whole park there. That used to be just a coal dock.
Where did they get the coal from?
It was all shipped in by large boats.
And then where would the coal go from there?
Well, they sold it locally.
And the people would come and pick it up, or would they?
They had to deliver it.
Oh, you delivered it.
Grand Haven Coal and Dock Company. That's about all there is to my family history. As I say, I was born here and graduated from Grand Haven High School in 1928. I started working at the Grand Haven Daily Tribune in 1930. I was a general reporter and sports editor. In 1943, I became staff correspondent in North Ottawa County for the Muskegon Chronicle. And I worked out of my home at 923 Franklin until I retired in 1975. I've been retired since then. My next birthday, I'll be 80 years old. Of course, you know that because I was born in 1910.
Yeah.
I attended Davenport College in Grand Rapids. And I also corresponded for several other Western Michigan newspapers, and also was employed for a time at WGHN.
Could you tell me some of your earliest memories?
Earliest memories?
Yeah, do you remember when you were 5 years old? Is there anything you can recall from that far back about your parents or your house?
No, we lived. The family lived at 715 Fulton. I can recall many memories. There was just a dirt road that was near, or it is near 7th Street. That it's all changed now because the highway has gone through there. I can remember going to old Fourth Ward School on Panora Avenue, and our family was very active in the First Reformed Church. Our whole life centered around that church. And when the First Reformed Church was organized, it was the first, what was often called the Dutch churches, the first Dutch church in the community. And since then, often that church have sprouted out all the other Reformed and Christian Reformed churches. I think there's 11 of them in this area. But, so with my newspaper background, why I was given the job as kind of a church historian or archivist of that church. When it came about, when the church was became 100 years old in 1950, and I wrote the church history, and unofficially I'm still in charge of all the archives that are up in the tower, and I don't think many people realize what's in there in that tower, all the old mementos of the church, and we probably won't.
Would you like to share the church's history with me? Who first established it?
Well, church first built where the office building is located at Fulton and 3rd Street. There's some office building there now. The Forum or something like that. It's where you go to get your driver's license.
Okay, yeah.
The Michigan Department of...
The county, out of county building or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's the...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, Michigan Bureau of...
Department.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's where you take your driver's license examination.
Yeah.
That was the site of the first church. And that first church was about 16 feet wide and about 30 feet long. And it was built out of scrap lumber. Reverend Ferry was the owner of a mill there, and there was scrap lumber at the mill. A lot of it was thrown in the river just to be discarded at the first cutting off from the tree. Was just scrap lumber, and I think 19 members of that first church borrowed canoes from the Indians, and they went out in Grand River and gathered discarded slabs of lumber. And it wasn't the first cutting, it was just maybe the second or third slabs that they pulled out of the river, and they built a church out of that. So they called it the Slab Church. And then Rick Robinson was the first owner of the city, or the first proprietor of the city, and he had set aside the present site of the church at Washington 3rd Street as for a church, and then he set aside the present site of the county building for a county building. So first he charged the church $200 for the site, but then after the church got started, he gave them back all but $25, so they got that site for $25. But since then, why, there's other churches have been organized, and the but the First Reformed Church continued to stay there ever since 1852. They still maintain that location of the church. Second Reformed Church is was organized later, and all these other Reformed and Christian Reformed churches were organized after First Reformed Church was organized. But the First Reformed Church is not the oldest church in town. Presbyterian Church is the oldest church, because that was organized by the Reverend Ferry, who was also pastor of the church. So, and they a couple of years ago, they celebrated their sesquicentennial. The First Reformed will celebrate their sesquicentennial in the year 2000.
Okay.
So, something to forward to. I don't think I'll be here, but that's the history of the church. But our family has always been very active in the Reformed denomination. Both of my brothers have been officers in the church, and I've been an officer in the church, Sunday school superintendent, and sang the choir 50 years. I don't sing anymore, but that's about it. What the affiliation with the church, amounts to. My older sister was Greta Fisher. She worked under Superintendent Babcock in the Board of Education office for many years. And my other sister was still living. Worked in the Coast Guard office, which was above the old post office on Washington and 3rd Street. She worked in the district office, was located there now, but that district office is no longer in Grand Haven, it's in Cleveland.
What did she do, though?
Mm-hmm.
What would she do? What kind of things?
She worked in the office. Mm-hmm. It was a pay office. They paid all the Coast Guard employees. Just down from Michigan City up north to Mackinac City. But, I can't remember very clearly anything about my boyhood, except that it's a lot of affiliation with the church. Like any other boy, I was just an ordinary boy.
What would you do, what would you do for fun in the summertime?
Well, most of it was spent right out in front of the house. It was a dirt road. Kids played in the streets in those days until the cars came, where then they weren't permitted to play in the streets anymore. It's too dangerous. Especially it's the Fulton Street,
yeah.
Because Fulton Street was U.S., what is now U.S. 31.
Oh.
You probably know that, don't you, the location of U.S. 31?
I know, I didn't know where it used to be, no.
Mm.
It used to be Fulton?
From Holland.
Oh, I see.
Okay. It came down Beechtree Street.
Okay.
And then the corner of Beechtree and Fulton was Eagle Ottawa. You turned west there, they had different titles. It was M21 at one time and M11, and it's now US 31. But then the US 31 would go as far as 7th Street, turn right, and then go north over the bridge.
Oh.
I can remember the old bridge over Grand River, and that's where the kids, most of them, learned to swim, because they could jump off from the bridge. Of course, you had to be careful you didn't interfere with the interurban traffic, because the interurban used that same bridge. Most kids learn to swim. They wouldn't jump in. Somebody would push them in. They had to swim. I can remember those incidents.
Is that how you learned how to swim?
Yeah, I didn't. I had a fear of the water, and I didn't care much about the water. The little swimming that I did was done off those bridges. See, they had piling underneath the bridge. You just walk on that piling, and then when the interurban would come, well, you just jumped in the river until the interurban came. The interurban used 7th Street to enter town. And then went south to this same Fulton Street and turned the interurban tracks and the trolley overhead, turned right at Fulton off from 7th, went to 3rd Street. And I often wondered why they didn't keep on going on 7th Street, you know, to Washington.
Yeah.
But in the wintertime, the interurban couldn't make that hill between 7th Street and 6th Street. See, it was too steep.
Oh, okay.
The interurban couldn't get any traction, so instead they went down 3rd Street to Fulton, and then on Fulton, and then turned left at 3rd, and then to Washington, and then they turned right on Washington to go down to the docks. But they talk a lot about, and people are interested now a lot about the activity at the waterfront. When we were kids, that was a favorite hangout, because big boats came in there, the car ferries came in there, and a lot of passenger boats came in there, and that was the place for kids to congregate down at the waterfront. So the popularity of the waterfront now really isn't new to the old timers, because that was a place to go just to watch the boats come in and see them leave, and it's just a busy place.
Is that popular when you were in high school?
No, See, the car ferries left in 1933. So, and the coming of automobiles went in the activity down there dropped off because people didn't use the boats for transportation. Most everybody used cars for transportation, but then, of course, when we were young, in this, of course, in the summertime, the beach was a big attraction. I mean, it's an attraction now, but it's altogether different. And there was no street out to the beach. If you wanted to go to the beach, you went on the pier, walked on the pier. And I mean, if you were downtown, I don't know when that street was put in, Harbor Drive, but of course, in the summertime, that was a big attraction for kids. But, now, of course, the beach is used primarily, I think, by outsiders. And,
what would you do on the beach? What would you do? Would you play
like
games?
Just like you do now, swim. And the activity down there was the same, but it was mostly local people who were down there, but I think nowadays it's mostly outsiders that go down there because it's too busy.
All the added tourism.
Well, and that camping area.
Oh yeah.
There were no fences there, and there was no camping area. You could take a tent if you wanted to and stay there, you know, as long as you wanted to. But there's, I think in 1920, the state was given that property. It was just a small oval. We never referred to it as a state park. It was the oval. And, of course, as that thing, as the popularity grew, they continued to add to the drives out there until now. I guess it's reached as far as it can go because well, that whole terrain out there was dunes, you know, and it was all leveled off. It was altogether different than what it is now. Now it's all leveled off
and built up with cottages.
Hmm?
Or else built up with cottages.
Well, the cottages are on the other side of the drive.
Yeah.
But, that was a big thing in the summertime. And picnics out there were very popular. Go out to the beach and family groups. Or
was there a pavilion out there?
Yeah, Highland Park Pavilion was out there. That was the dance hall and a bathhouse. And then there's a man who was mayor when I was a kid. His name was John Lowell. He owned a jewelry store downtown. You can get passes there to use in the bathhouse and free rides on the urban. And he encouraged the children to go out there. And So that was real popular.
Did you have to rent your bathing suits?
No, that was all free. You had your own bathing suit.
Okay.
You just put on a bathing suit, put a pair of trousers over it, and you were all set. You go in the water, all you had to do was remove your trousers, and that was it. But then some people use the bathhouse to change. I don't know what happened to that old pavilion, but it was discontinued. Now there's an apartment house there now.
What school did you go to?
What school?
Mm-hmm.
Well, where I lived on Fulton Street, I never knew where I was. It was on the borderline, and as this town grew, one year I'd go to Old Central School, and the next year I'd go to the East End School. It was Fourth Ward School then, but it's Ferry School now.
Okay.
And so one year I would go to one. It's all dependent on how the where the children lived. And I liked the old Fourth Ward School because that's where most of my friends went to school. At Central School was children from the other part of town. But I even went to school in the old German church at the corner of 6th Street and Franklin. Didn't have room for second graders in any other school, so they put a bunch of us in the basement of that old German church, now the Episcopal Church. They're on the property now. It used to be a German church there, there were a lot of colorful churches, or colorful schools in town. I can remember visiting Columbus Street School. I was on Columbus Street there now, near 2nd Street. And there were schools, small schools all over town. But, the only ones I attended were Central School and Fourth Ward School, which is now Ferry School.
What do you remember about the schools? What were they like on the inside?
Well, they were just like any other school. Seems to me they were always overcrowded. And the reason I liked Fourth Ward School so was that it was all open there. It's all filled up now, but that was the edge of town. You know, the main part of town is where Ferry School is now. There was all open fields there. And the football field was there. High school played football at Ferry School. And the tennis courts were there. But the schools themselves, they were just ordinary schools. Old-fashioned desks and things. Well, most the teachers were older women, didn't have any men teachers. They're all, I think even the principal was a woman. There was a Miss Cherry that I had for principal, and there were other kind of elderly women who were teaching and who were principals. Now it's, I guess there's just many men teachers now as women teachers. But they were very school, or the old Fourth Ward school was the most modern school, that old Central School, that was burned down twice. That's where Central School is now. It was burned down, I think, in the first Central School. It was burned down in I think, 1900. Of course, I wasn't alive then, but my father was a fireman, and he told about climbing up on that roof, tried to put the fire out, and he was ordered to come down because it was so dangerous. And then, of course, the big fire there was that big red brick building at Central School. That burned in 1963, and was replaced by this present elementary building. And then in that same block was the old high school. It faced on 7th Street. And that was quite a improvement, because I don't think people can imagine it now, but all the public school children in town went to that Central School. The high school was on the third floor, and the junior high on the second floor, and the grades were on the first floor. It was a large building. I remember when I think I was in junior high and had fire drills. We had to, in the kindergarten was also on the second floor, and we had to go into the kindergarten room right off from Columbus Street and pick up or escort the kindergarten children down the fire escape. Mm-hmm. Of course, some of those kids got awful scared, and we had to pick them up and carry them. That was just during fire drill. That was so crowded that it was a fire trap. But then they built the new high school on 7th Street, which is now the playground of the Central School off 7th Street. And of course, that proved to be inadequate as a high school, so they built the present high school on Cutler. That was in 1950. And now that's inadequate, so they want to build a new high school, but people didn't go along with that bond issue, and so now they put that on the shelf for a while.
Yeah.
But, so I attended Central School, and then our class was the first freshman class to go in the new high school on 7th Street. And that was a big improvement because until then there was no gymnasium. The high school teams had to play basketball in the old armory on 2nd Street.
Mm.
And of course in the new building they put in a gymnasium which was far from adequate. It was terrible. It had a running track around the periphery of the gymnasium, and things developed so that they had to have a bigger high school. And then there's additions been made to the present high school too. So just grows and grows and grows. But
what did
I went to the old central school, and there's one woman stood out in my memory in that central school in junior high. Her name was Julia Sowell, and I was interested in early history of the United States. She had an unusual room and had all memorabilia of the early history of the country, and she was a tall lady, and you'd think you were being taught by Martha Washington herself. She resembled one of the old pioneer teachers. But, I'll never forget her. And there were other people then after they built the new school. Our freshman class was the first freshman class to go into that new building, and that was a big improvement over what they had before, but before long that was inadequate. And, I could never figure out why they put those two buildings on the same block. Central School faced 6th Street, and the high school faced 7th. And there wasn't much room left in between for a playground. So that was a handicap. But anyway, they later built this present high school. Of course, the whole trouble was when they consolidated all these rural school districts into one Grand Haven school district. See, and that let all these rural students come into our buildings. And so they needed a lot more room. So that's what's resulted now. And now they want more space for the high school. But I graduated from that old high school on 7th Street.
What did you do in the winter time? What would you do?
Well,
after school.
Well, there was a lot of sliding in the hills. Had a toboggan run on 2nd Street. Did you ever hear about that?
Is that the one they would ice down?
Yeah. It get wash tubs at the top of the hill and fill it with water, carry it to the top of the hill and let it run down 2nd Street, and that was a toboggan slide. They had to have somebody up Washington Street to stop traffic and to stop the interurban. They'd go way down the river on toboggans, carried about 20 kids on the toboggan.
Who owned the toboggan?
Hmm?
Who owned the toboggan?
All different people would build their own.
Oh.
I never had one, but if you went down there and helped, well, you could ride on the toboggan. But, of course, a lot of the parents didn't like the idea because it was pretty dangerous. Well, they really went. It's steep there between Lafayette and Washington. That's a steep hill. And you go like the dickens. My boyhood.
What did you do in high school for social activities? Did you have a lot of high school clubs?
Well, we were in clubs. We had social hours and see, I was the youngest member of the family, mm-hmm. of the five children, and I had a lot of help from my older brothers and sisters to keep me occupied, so I spent a lot of my time working. For years I worked in drug stores. And my uncle
during high school?
Yeah. In a drug store, I was working. I was still in knee pants, and I was working at a drug store. The old square drug store at the... it's still there, at 7th and Fulton Street.
When did you stop wearing knee pants? How old did you have to be?
Well, it depended on how tall you were. Tall kids looked kind of silly wearing knee pads, so I was tall and skinny, and so... I guess when you get to be an 8th grade or so, I went to trousers. But a lot of my time was taken up working.
Where was...
Had a paper route. Yeah, it was always, I didn't necessarily solicit my services. I just say, so-and-so wants help in the drugstore, or wants...
Where was the drugstore located?
7th and Fulton. Its building is still there. It's a big square brick building. They called it the Square Drugstore. Oh. I don't know what's in there now, but it's an old building.
What kind of stuff did you have in the drugstore?
Oh, everything.
Was there a little ice cream parlor in it too?
Well, yeah, there's most ice cream and most drugstores. First thing you went in was a soda fountain. And of course, young fellows who worked there were called soda jerkers. Mm. And I was... quite an honor to be a soda jerker, you know. And I can remember I was tall, but on 4th of July, the ice cream came in great big cylinders or great big round things that went down in the freezer, and we fellows who were tall didn't have any trouble, but the more you dug that ice cream out, well, the farther you had to dive down into that container. And boy, on 4th of July, was just one parade from morning until night, people buying ice cream at the drugstore. And boy, by the time 11 o'clock came at night, I don't care whether you ever saw any more ice cream, but drugstores were drugstores in those days. Now they're more like they sell everything. You know, of course they sold toilet articles, anything. That type, but I mean, my job was keeping the cigarette case filled up at one store. Then I worked downtown at what's now Steiner's. And the same man who owned the drugstore downtown, which is now Steiner's, owned the Square drugstore. And so I was back and forth, or wherever I was needed. But they sold lots of candy. You know, I can remember that there was a soda fountain there, and then right next to the soda fountain was a candy case. And on Saturdays, children would come there with their pennies and their nickels or so, and it took them forever and ever to make up their mind, because that was quite a selection of things, you know. And so it kind of you had to be awfully patient with those children, you know. So whoever worked in the drugstore had to acquire a lot of patience with children, because they didn't have much money, but what they had, they wanted to be sure what they bought they liked. But then always errands to run, and I know in the wintertime I worked at that Square drug store, and I lived right across the street on Fulton Street from the drugstore, and the owner of the business had me check they had a furnace, you know, they had to stoke coal and keep it in the wintertime. You couldn't let the fire go out because it damaged the building. So he paid me extra for going in there on Sunday and stoking up the furnace, checking the furnace, sure that was in severe winter weather. We put all kinds of. My mother grew a lot of produce in the backyard, and the place was just loaded with cucumbers. So people would come there, you know, and I guess for 3 cents or a nickel or something, you could get a cucumber, you know. So there was some people liked to have those cucumbers delivered. So I had when I was younger, I had quite a number of customers that kept in cucumbers, because in those days that was quite a delicacy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But,
why were
they kept you busy? I played a lot of tennis.
Why were cucumbers a delicacy? Hard to grow?
Yeah, they were. I don't think they were sold in stores. You know, the stores didn't bother much with fresh produce, grocery stores. Later on, they had fruit markets and they had everything. But something about a cucumber right fresh out of the garden, it's a lot better than one that sat in the icebox for a long time. You know, it was fresh.
When someone was sick, did you deliver the medicine to them?
Yeah, you're just an errand boy, and jump on your bike and away you go.
And then you also played tennis in your spare time.
Yeah.
Who would you play with?
All my friends in school.
Was there a tennis team, or?
No. Well, in high school, I played tennis, but when I was younger, you know, junior high and then before that, where Freddie's school now is, I don't know whether there's any tennis courts there now or not. Because when it was just Fourth Ward School, there was just a small building on the corner. That I think that burned down. But that was a real center of activity, were those tennis courts there at that old Fourth Ward School. See, those I think they still must have tennis courts there. I don't things have changed so, but that is real, and it was easy to, you know, to buy a tennis racket. They didn't cost much in those days. But you could get one for $2-3. And so tennis was a real popular sport. I didn't relish football because I was so tall and skinny. And I couldn't take the rough treatment. And whereas in tennis, I was tall, and I with some help of the older fellows, I developed into a tennis player. But there was all kinds of things there was one place on Fulton Street. There's houses there now, but it's on Fulton Street, east of the Spelder. It was part of that was celery field, but there was also a big field there, and we pardon me, we developed a golf course. You take a rod and go to the blacksmith's shop and get the end turned up and make golf clubs out of these metal rods, and that was our golf club. But, that was quite an attraction. But of course, later on, there was houses built there. We couldn't play there anymore. But we didn't have any trouble. I get a kick out of these young people who can't find anything to do. We made things to do. Of course, everything's didn't have skateboards. We'd make our own. I don't know what they called them, but it was just a board with a handle out in front and the roller skates underneath, and that was our skateboard. There's nothing like what they are now. But there were all kinds of things to take up here. Of course, we had to stay pretty close to home on Sundays because we weren't permitted to do anything special on Sunday other than take a walk or, of course, go to church and Sunday school. But, there was always something.
Did you have dances in high school?
Yeah, they had social hours. Mm-hmm. I think every Friday afternoon from 3 to 5 they had social hours. And that was more of a place to learn how to dance than anything else. You know, fellas in some of the girls too, they didn't know how to dance, and the ones who could dance, why, they'd teach the ones who couldn't. That was always a lot of fun, because I was young people seem altogether different than they are now. They're more sociable, and boy, as you learn to dance, why, that was quite a problem. Because, of course, the music wasn't, I think it must have been a old radio or something, I don't know. They didn't have a... Then they had dances in social hours, and that night too they'd have parties, and I used to get a kick out of these austere men teachers, you know, with their wives dancing. They seemed so clumsy, you know, and they were real nice people, but I could tell that they hadn't danced for a while. I loved to dance. But in school, you get into a group, people interested in music and plays and stuff, quite often that conflicted with my work, but we were always putting on plays, and I think every Thursday morning we had a chorus practice. Everybody who wanted to could join this chorus club. And they had all the popular musical numbers in a big book, and we were taught how to sing, you know, tenor and sing bass. And of course, the girls had to sing alto and soprano, quite often they'd put on an operetta. You get involved in that kind of activity while you're always after you. As myself and several other fellows were a little more adept, and most of them, I guess, usually get the leading roles in these operettas. And then, of course, they got around in church that we could sing, you know, so we had to join the church choir. That's how I met my wife, because she was a church organist, and she played the piano, of course. And there's our crowd was all musical, you know, so we didn't have time finding some activity. If it wasn't in school, it was in church, or had a drama club, used to be popular too. We even put on HSFM Pinafore, that operetta. It's quite popular. HSM Pinafore. It's an English operetta. It's difficult, but anyway, gave us something to do.
What happened after you graduated from high school? Did you go directly to Davenport? Or did you work for a while?
No, I was going to be a druggist, but I decided that I didn't. The drugstore stayed open until midnight or 11 o'clock, and if there were customers there, it was long hours, so I didn't care about being a druggist. So, I got interested in newspaper work.
When did you meet your wife?
Well, I've known her all my life.
Okay, ever since you started the choir then?
Well, even before then.
Before that?
Families were close, and she was musical. She played piano, and later on she played the organ in church. And see, everything is revolves around the church.
When you, the depression happened pretty much right after you graduated from high school, didn't it? About a year.
Yeah.
What did you do during?
Well, you had these jobs. But then, after I graduated from high school, I was working in the drugstore, and then I worked in Story & Clark for a while. And
what did you do at Story & Clark?
I was a tuner, a rough tuner. I didn't care about that, so I went to business school. But then this job was offered at the Tribune. These new owners took over the Tribune. And one of my tennis friends was the owner's son, and this Mr. McCall graduated from Northwestern University, and then he became editor of the Tribune, and he was in our tennis group, there was an opening there, so I went. The Tribune at that time was down on Washington Street, where that office supply store is. The building where the Tribune is now, that wasn't built, I think, until 1938. But where the office supply store is, it's the old Tribune building. Way up in the top of the front of the building, there's still the Tribune sign up there in stone. Before I started to work at the Tribune, I went to business school in Grand Rapids.
For how long?
I would say one term. But then this friend of mine wanted me to work for him, so that's how I got started in the newspaper business.
What year was that?
1930.
Okay. Did you live at home during this? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I lived at home. Of course, we were kind of a big family, and everybody had jobs, so...
Yeah. When did you get married?
1937. Okay. And, of course, the war came, and I had children, so I was ordered to report for physical, but by the time they got around to my number, why they were going on the beaches in France, and they didn't want people who were 30 years old. They were considered old people. They wanted just these football players and kids who could take that terrible, terrible, terrible onslaught on those beaches. If you ever get a chance to see a movie of invasion of France, see what that was. Why, it was just terrible. So by the time I my number came up, why, I was too old. And then, of course, Barb was a baby. My daughter was a baby, and they put you in 2A. we got along through the war, or the Depression and the war, pretty well. I had offers to go to other towns, newspaper work, but kind of difficult to pull up your stakes. You know, kids are little, and my wife's relatives were all here, and my relatives were all here, and now people seem to move around a lot easier, easier.
You were telling me earlier on the phone about all the trouble they had when they were trying to find a spot for the new hospital.
Yeah, I think that's what I didn't know what kind of a
what year?
Want me to read this?
Sure, if you'd like. Did you write that up?
Yeah.
What year was that?
What?
About what year were they looking for the new hospital and going through that?
39. Okay. Originally, the hospital was located where the Presbyterian Church chapel is. There's a meteor. I call this reminiscences. I don't know how to spell it, but... At the present time, I'd almost forgotten about this. Have you got a lot of space on you? At the present time, the county of Ottawa is in the process of attempting to choose a site for a much-needed jail. In the history of the county, which was organized in 1837, and included a large territory north of what is now Ottawa County, and included Muskegon Township, and maybe even farther north. I don't believe there has been as much ado about selecting a site as there is at present over the jail. The terrible situation has, of course, this is kind of editorializing, but it's the truth. The terrible situation has gone on for 5 years and has involved even a movement several times to relocate the county seat. There have been other difficulties in selection of sites for buildings within the city of Grand Haven. The city needed a new hospital. I think that's back in 1939, as the old hospital on Fifth Street, just south of Franklin, was inadequate. It was a converted home given by the William Hatton family. Several sites were suggested. One group wanted the hospital to be located at the corner of Washington and 6th Streets, where the police and fire stations are now located. That was dropped as it was declared too busy and lacked needed parking space. Under the then president, Roosevelt, the WPA program was organized, and the mayor of Grand Haven was Mr. Van Wessem, James Van Wessem. The large area at the corner of Sheldon Road and Taylor was being developed for a softball park with four diamonds. The site had been used as a neighborhood dump. There were few houses out there at this time. It's all built up now. But just as the city recreation department was preparing to use the area for softball, the city council and others toured the city for a site. They came upon this area that was being developed for softball, and they immediately called a meeting and decided that this was the place for the hospital. That was in 1939. The softball people became angered, but the city soon installed a lighted field at Cutler and Grant Street. There are tennis courts there now. The choice for the location of the new high school also has an interesting history. In 1950, the high school had fast outgrown the high school on 7th Street between Franklin and Clinton Streets. A large area where the present high school is located on Cutler was occupied by a giant sand hill, commonly referred to as Green Hill. The city council voted to install a large city sewer service connecting the Waverly sewer near Grant and serving the Sheldon Road area, which was starting to be developed. That's one of the choice residential areas in town now, Sheldon Road. A local dentist by the name of Dr. Reisdorp owned property on Grant Street, and he was about to be assessed the cost in that area for this extension of the Waverly sewer. Ray Schauble came here as a recreation director and a gymnasium teacher, and he used this Reisdorp property on Grant for his outdoor activities, including softball. That was just a block from junior high on 7th Street. There are tennis courts there now. The school board also sought to buy the remaining 10 acres. This Reisdorp property was 10 acres, and the area, including this Green Hill, was another 10 acres, so it made 20 acres. And the board sought the property for the high school site. There was another doctor on the school board, Dr. Charles Long. He owned the south 10 acres along the railroad tracks and extended way up to Park Avenue. But as he was a member of the Board of Education, he had to resign from the board, and the entire 20 acres was purchased all the way to Park Street. I was in newspaper work at that time, and well remember these different events. See, I'd find out stuff at the city council meetings, and I'd tell Schauble about he's going to lose his softball field. So he got busy. You know, Earl Babcock was the superintendent. He got busy with Mr. Babcock, and then the school board bought that whole area. I don't take any credit for it, but I mean, that's what happened. A local trucking company, Dykehouse Brothers, had two big trucks, and they moved that Green Hill field, that was a great big thing. And it was moved to the swamp on what is now Jackson Street, where 50 acres is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that road or that street past 50 acres is Jackson Street. It was all filled in. It was just swamp, and it was all filled in with the sand from that Bean Hill. This is all ancient history, but I don't know. I think it's interesting.
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know.
It took several months to transfer all this sand. Those trucks were kept busy. And finally, I thought that the high school would be on top of that hill. But no, they had to dig all that sand out because... have you ever been in that high school? Well, there's another... You never see the floor. There's a another floor under the main floor. There's where all the machinery and all the pipes and everything. They all had to be dug out. It was something. And this trucking company was paid for removing the sand. The city paid them for filling in Jackson Street, and the Board of Education paid them for removing the sand from the high school site. So those guys made a good deal out of it. Another interesting sidelight involving the hospital site. This is poorly organized, but where the hospital is now was formerly an unusual city cemetery. The cemetery was located at Sheldon Road and Taylor. That's where the north end of the hospital is now. And years ago, there was a terrible disease, and they couldn't bury people in the regular Lake Forest Cemetery, so they buried people in this area.
People who had this disease?
I forget what, but it was a communicable disease. And they couldn't bury the people in the regular cemetery. They had to bury it out there on Sheldon Road, bury them on Sheldon Road. hospital was built there in 1939, but additions have been built to the, not only to the south of Taylor, and that's where the main part of the hospital is now. So original new hospital is still there, but it's on the north end of the building. You can tell that. I mean, if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you drive past there, you can tell the difference between the old hospital and the new part. But they continued to add to that hospital on the north, and they, and I was out there and in digging in that area, along Taylor Avenue, they uncovered bodies.
Did they really?
Skeletons. The burial area was known as the pest house.
What did they do with those skeletons?
Huh?
What did they do with those skeletons?
I don't know. I don't think they found any skeletons, anybody's heads or anything, but, bones.
Yeah.
But I can remember, and then that whole area there, you know, that I talked about before, was developed for softball. Years ago, that was the athletic park where the hospital is. It used to be the old Grand Haven Athletic Park for baseball. And we kids had to climb over Green Hill because there's no streets out there. But they had to climb over Green Hill and come over toward Sheldon Road there, which was just a sand road. People, there weren't very many. If you ever go into a Wendy's, there's a picture of that old baseball field on Sheldon Road. And the, you know, you come into Wendy's, and then you go back to the restrooms. And there's all historical pictures on the walls there. Did you ever see those? Well, there's a picture of that baseball field. Well, that's where we kids went to watch baseball games, and that old athletic field. And they had a grandstand. That was quite a place. They had a grandstand, and that blew down. I don't think a lot of people know all those. What do these other people talk about? Do you interview Henry Coyman?
No, I haven't interviewed him.
He's been interviewed already.
Yeah, I believe someone else wanted to interview him.
There's a dentist interviewed him, Seibold.
They talk about just the things in their life that, you know, that the experiences that they had and that affected them the most.
What are you going to do with these? I'll just file them away, huh?
Well, the museum wants to use them for references, and I want to make one conglomerate, I think that's what the right word, tape, of all the people I've interviewed so far. One side to Grand Haven people and the other side to Spring Lake people, discussing, you know, all types of different things, from education to transportation.
That's a good thing you remind me of this. I forgot all about it.
What other things happened in Grand Haven that you remember from your newspaper years that were pretty big deals around here?
Anybody tell you about Central Park? What a beehive that was?
Mm-mm.
There's a bandstand there where that fountain is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's where we got a lot of, in the summertime, we got a lot of our entertainment. They had a Grand Haven concert band. And Mr. Slaughter was the director. And,
About when was this?
Oh, over a long period of time. It's all. See, that's where a lot of the.
Before the war?
The interesting thing about that is that's where a lot of the people, the couples met. And later, there was a meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my father met my mother.
Oh.
And walk them home from the band concert, see? There wasn't much. Lots of people weren't permitted to go to the theaters. They used to call them vaudettes. And they were bad. You know, until they just weren't. Were approved by a lot of people, especially these Dutchmen. They are strict. And so that's where a lot